the clues and bloody evidence from a crime scene in Syria. A possible chemical weapons attack has now become likely, with many in the international community saying it has been confirmed. But here's the president speaking to CNN.
What we've seen indicates that this is clearly a big event of grave concern. And you know, we are already in communications with the entire international community. We're moving through the UN to try to prompt better action from them. And we've called on the Syrian government to allow an investigation of the site because UN inspectors are on the ground right now. We don't expect cooperation given their past history.
The Syrian government has continued to deny the use of any such chemical weapons, but on Friday, Russia urged the government to cooperate with UN investigators searching for evidence of chemical warfare. It appears that U.S. forces may be considering some kind of military response. Naval vessels were reportedly moved towards Syria over the weekend. But the president's language is still a language of warnings, not action at this point.
When you start seeing chemical weapons used on a large scale, and again, we're still gathering information about this particular event, but it is very troublesome.
It remains uncertain how the U.S. and the European Union will move forward in the region. Joining us now is Lara Satrakian, journalist and founder of Syria Deeply. Lara, welcome.
Great to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about the issue at hand, this question of the use of chemical weapons and how it may have motivated the international community to do something coherent here in response. What are the pieces of the story on the ground in the area around Damascus that's been affected?
Well, right now you have the U.S., the U.K., France, Turkey, Israel all saying that the Assad regime is pretty unquestionably responsible for a chemical attack on the area of Eastern Ghouta outside of Damascus that killed, by Doctors Without Borders count, more than 350 people, injured thousands. And a consensus emerging in the Western world that something has to be done about this, that this purported chemical weapons attack is the trigger that would escalate this conflict to a point of external military intervention, presumably U.S.-led military intervention. At the same time, you have a counter-narrative coming out of Russia and China and, of course, the Assad regime, that the rebels are the ones who actually use the chemical weapons, that there's no definitive proof that the regime is behind this attack. All of this is premature. Russia comparing this scenario to the run-up to the Iraq war, and a clear strategic threat on the part of Syria that if the U.S. or anyone else were to intervene with missile strikes or any other moves on Syrian territory, we would see the consequences and repercussions in a, quote, fireball inflaming the Middle East at large.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Russian rhetoric here. This isn't the first time they've used the implausible WMD argument, hearkening back to what happened in Iraq. But in this particular case, we're not talking about storehouses of WMDs. We know that the Syrians have storehouses of chemical weapons. The question really is of use right now. How does that change the argument?
Absolutely. And to your point, this emerging consensus also that it was a sarin gas attack in particular. Syria is known to have stockpiles of sarin gas. The UN inspection team that is now going to on a fact-finding mission in that area was already in country because of more than a dozen cases of believed chemical weapons attacks before the headlines of last week. So there's this incontrovertible fact that Syria has chemical weapons, that there are now documented cases of the Assad regime using them on selected targets. What really changed last week was this language around it being an indiscriminate and widespread attack. The fact that what happened last week, as we understand it, is on a broader scale with broader civilian consequences than anything we had seen to date. So that was really the fundamental change.
We learned this month that there are a million children who are believed to be refugees in some manner of this conflict that's gone on for well over 2 years now. Given the scale of the conventional weapons used and the casualties already in the record books, from the perspective of people on the ground in Syria, does this attack constitute an escalation, even though the international community may regard it as a fundamental change from their perspective, what they're seeing, the brutality that happens every single day? Do they view this as an escalation?
What we hear again and again from Syrian civilians is that this is not a steep escalation. This isn't a particular change. This isn't any fundamentally different from what they experience on a day-to-day basis, which is indiscriminate rocket attacks on rebel-held areas. Now, several cases, as I mentioned, more than a dozen reported cases of chemical weapons being used on civilian and rebel areas. This feeling in Syria that this is dragging on with deadly consequence day after day. And the West only really seems to notice on particular occasions when we say that there's a particular milestone. So when you watch this war unfold in slow motion, you really see the consequences affecting people and this kind of malaise that has set in, this feeling that the world has forgotten them, even a deep skepticism to the point where now that you have Washington changing tack and considering military intervention, moving military assets, you even have a kind of cynicism in Syria that, you know what, nobody really cares. Everyone's looking out for their interests, but no one fundamentally is willing to step in and take the initiative and take leadership to stop this war from dragging on.
So after all of this time, the focus on chemical weapons here, as brutal as this attack seems to have been, it feels like a symbolic response to a symbolic single attack over a two-year war, and that a international community symbolic response, some sort of missile firing or a naval blockade, is not going to have the effect of actually changing things on the ground. Is that fair?
Absolutely. It comes off to Syrians like a symbolic and rather limited response on the part of the international community. The U.S. even saying, even if we do take on any kind of military intervention, it will be very circumspect. We don't expect boots on the ground. We're not trying to debilitate the Assad regime. At the very most, the U.S. and its allies would step in to punish this particular attack, so as to deter future use of chemical weapons. But this is not the world saying we're going to step in and stop Syria's war or prevent civilian casualties. This would be a very surgical and direct retaliation for what's seen as Syria itself violating international law with the use of chemical weapons. And this notion of red lines crossed or not crossed, that's what really begins to settle into the Syrian mind that, you know what, there's very little Assad can do that would really trigger a massive international response. That leads to a kind of loss of U.S. credibility in this conflict. 2 years after Washington calls for the Assad regime to step down, what are they really willing to do about it? At the same time, a strategic calculus that you can understand in Washington, that there are not only no good options here, but that practically all options lead to very bad outcomes.
Lara Satrakian, founder of Syria Deeply, speaking to us from London. Thanks so much, Lara.
Thank you.
Joining us now, P.J. Crowley, former Department of State spokesperson, currently a professor at George Washington University. P.J., welcome back.
Hello, John.
So no good outcomes. We've discussed that before. The question of, is this under any circumstances little more than a symbolic response, whatever the international community comes up with? We haven't talked about that before in the context of a chemical weapons attack. Is the administration painted into a corner on some level, or can they really change the game on the ground in Syria?
Well, that's the calculation the White House appears to be trying to determine now. And with the rhetoric that you hear in Washington now, it would appear that a decision's been made that some kind of action will be taken. The real question is it to send a message as a deterrent to Bashar al-Assad that whatever else you want to do in this civil war or civil wars, the use of chemical weapons will not be tolerated? Or in some fashion, is the United States and others now determined to tilt the battlefield in a decisive way that favors the opposition?
Let's get to the tilt the battlefield in a moment. Under any circumstances, if a deterrent message is all that they manage to come up with, isn't that a message to the Syrians on the ground? Everything we've seen up till now is permitted by the international community.
Well, I recognize, you know, the point that Laura made just a moment ago about, you know, the international community being focused on how 1,000 people were killed and not the other 100,000 that have died over the course of the last 2 years. And the conundrum here is that, in my view, you don't have one war going on. It's not just a war between Bashar al-Assad and an opposition. It's a war between Sunnis and Shia. It's a war between Saudi Arabia and Iran. It's a war involving an al-Qaeda sympathetic group that now holds territory in Syria. So from a United States or international community standpoint, it's if you choose to intervene, which war are you intervening within, and to what effect, and most importantly, at what level of cost, and is that something that is sustainable in terms of public opinion, both in the United States and around the world?
Well, of course, P.J. Crowley, former Department of State spokesperson, you and I can play the hindsight game as long as we want here on the radio. Let's do it for a minute or so. You've described a deck really stacked against the administration in doing something that can either enter the right war or alter the battlefield. Is that an argument for an intervention that would have taken place early in the game, before the opposition became so infiltrated with al-Qaeda, before the sort of Iran-Saudi Arabia dynamic began to develop, and before Russia really seems to have the upper hand now, putting the U.S. on the defensive at every turn?
Well, I think the difference, say, between Syria and what we saw in the context of Libya 2 years ago is that the United Nations has been sidelined. So you do not necessarily have the consensus within the region for a particular course of action. And understand, while the United States has its own views about what should be done, ultimately, whatever the United States or the international community does has to be supported by countries like Iraq, Turkey, Jordan, Lebanon, Israel, because the impact is going to be felt in the neighborhood, not beyond. And the Goldilocks kind of problem that you have is that any kind of escalation, either from within Syria or outside Syria, has the potential to escalate this beyond Syria's borders. I think the administration has been reluctant to get directly involved as a military combatant. I think that caution is prudent. But now, because you have run out of effective political opposition or political options, the Geneva process that was set up to have a negotiation directly between the Assad regime and the opposition, which would lead to Assad voluntarily stepping down, that process is frozen. So I think with this latest incident involving chemical weapons, the Obama administration is now forced to really seriously consider military options for the first time.
P.J. Crowley, former Department of State spokesperson, currently a professor at George Washington University.